This is Tiffany Henderson, and you're listening to the Studio Success Formula Podcast.
Well, welcome to the Studio Success Formula Podcast, the business school for dance studio owners. And now for your host, Clint Salter.
Hey there, studio owners. It's Clint Salter from Studio Success Formula, and thank you for joining us. Our guest today is the successful owner of 7 Tiffany's Dance Academy locations with over 2,500 students and enrollments of over 4,000. And she's also the founder of Twinkle Star Dance. Please welcome to the Studio Success Formula podcast, Tiffany Henderson. Hello, Tiffany.
Hello, how are you?
Fantastic. Really great to have you here today. Thanks for taking the time out.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Now, Tiffany, you were a professional jazz dancer before opening up Tiffany's Dance Academy. Why did you make the decision to open up your own studio?
It turned out that right after I finished dancing and finished my college degree at the University of Arizona, I met my husband-to-be, and his name is Paul, and we moved back to the Bay Area where I am from. And at the time that we moved back, it was January, you know, mid dance season for us here in the U.S. And it was, you know, I was just trying to find some jobs, some teaching jobs, something that I could just make a little money just while I was, you know, kind of getting my feet wet in the area. And the first job that I got was working for a program at a community center with 2 to 6-year-olds. And at the time, I didn't even know what a 2-year-old did. I mean, I hadn't seen children in a very long time. I didn't know when they went to kindergarten. I had no idea.
You were like, can they walk? Do they talk? Right. What do they do?
Yeah, are they in the first grade? Or I mean, I had no idea. So I took the job because it's whatever, you know, the first thing that I could find. And I found myself in at a community center in a class with 22-year-olds and their mothers with strollers inside the classroom. And I'm thinking, what in the world am I going to do? But, you know, long story short, I made that job work and actually ended up really, really loving that and found, kind of created my own program there and found a nice balance between structure and fun for the babies. And I really, really loved it. And I was teaching and I was teaching babies. I was teaching advanced kids. I was dancing and performing. And then I got married. And so we decided to buy a house. And in the Bay Area, where I'm from, Silicon Valley, at that time was the dot-com boom. So you couldn't buy a house down in the Silicon Valley, you know, for any kind of reasonable price. So we looked at moving out to where we are now in Livermore and commuting. And so we bought the house. I commuted and taught for a while. And then after a while, I was pregnant with my first son, who is now 14. And I decided then that I didn't want to drive anymore. And I found there was a retail shopping center that was brand new, right where we bought our brand new home, and a bunch of, a lot of young families were moving in at the time, like us. And I just thought, you know what, if I put my baby program right here that I've been doing down there, I think I could work maybe 10 hours a week. I don't know, maybe I'd be a half-time mom, half-time, you know, teach dance. So, you know, that just, the decision to open the studio was always something that I, you know, probably wanted to do, but was more out of, not necessity, but just functionality. And so we opened, put the studio in, and that first year before the door opened, we had 350 kids registered before we even started class. So really, those make up the decisions. And I think also, you know, there's always that idea that you want to have your own thing and, you know, just kind of take these kids and train them all the way up. Because a lot of times when you're teaching at a studio, you're kind of getting kids, you know, other people have trained them. So it was very exciting to me to have my own thing.
Yeah, awesome. And so you spoke about a few things there that I just want to touch on. The first one is the 300 students. I mean, what kind of marketing strategies, or was it quite organic? Was it a mix of great location, the way you branded yourself? I mean, what got 300 new students in the door before you'd even started?
Yeah, great question. So the first thing, that I think it was a combination of those things that you just mentioned. The first thing that we did is this was in year 2000, okay? So we created a trifold flyer, and it had a picture of myself It had some pictures of some kids I had worked with. It had my, you know, my dance degree where I'd performed, where I've been teaching, information about myself and about the studio. And we decided to call the studio Tiffany's Dance Academy, which from the outside seems very kind of, I don't know, it's not, I can find the word for it. It's not immature. It just seems maybe less professional. But we thought, you know what, when I go into this, and as you said, I was a professional jazz dancer. So I did have that as my background. But when I went to market my studio, what I knew is that I was only going to get, and I only really wanted those new recreational dancers. I didn't want dancers, nor did I think I was going to get them from other existing studios. So I knew that marketing myself as this expert and only wanting high-end dancers, you know, come and take, you know, 17 hours a week from me right away was probably not going to work. I knew, though, that I could market to those brand new 2 through 6-year-olds and I could get them. And I thought the name Tiffany was sweet and it attracted the kids, the young kids and the mothers. So we did the trifold, we made the name, and then that mailed to about 2,000 homes in the area. And then I just sat home because at the time the studio was being built, the center was, and I just answered the phone. And I don't think anybody else is as enthusiastic about your business as you are, the studio owner. So yeah, and you know, and I loved talking about it. I loved talking, and it was so exciting, these people calling in, and they were going to be my students. So I would take as long as it took on the phone with each parent to get them registered or give them information. And I wasn't hurried to get them off the phone, and I would make connections and ask them lots of questions because I honestly did care about, you know, what they had to say. So that's what we did. And I sat home and I registered them that way. And then also I put, and this sounds funny, but this is the organic part. I put a table in front. There's a picture of me sitting at a table, like, you know, a plastic folding table in front of the space, because the space, I couldn't occupy the space yet because they were still building the center, with pink balloons and my son Jack, who was like 5 months old. And I sat there, and that was how we actually got to the first 100 kids, even before I took phone calls. And as people drove by, there's a location part, right? We were on a busy street. So we paid a lot more in our rent because of that drive-by traffic. And that was, that's just in your marketing budget. So they could see the sign, they could see us sitting there, and they would drive in, and then I would register them right there. So it was a combination of those things that really got us going. And I think we ended that year with near 375 kids in one room studio.
Fantastic. Look, you touched on something which I think is really important and so many studios miss, and that's that when they're marketing, they try and be all things to all people. You know, you had absolute clarity. You went in there saying, you know what, we're all about these 2 to 6-year-olds. They're what we want. They're who we serve best. That's what my program is created for. I mean, do you think that played a big part in getting those students in the door, rather than saying we are your everyday dance studio that takes 2-year-olds to 22-year-olds?
Yes, I do believe that. The point is that you, if you market to the 2 to 6s, because you know that is the biggest market out there, that's the biggest group of population that you can pull from, that's a bigger group, right? Because they don't dance yet. They don't dance anywhere yet. That doesn't mean that then you can't take those kids and grow them into professional dancers. And we have done that. You know, I knew inside, I know how to take these dancers and make them something, but I don't necessarily have to tell the parent that I plan on taking their 2-year-old to a college dance level.
No, that would scare a lot of them, especially if it's if they've got that recreation kind of mindset going on as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think that sometimes a studio owner might get afraid that if they don't sort of talk about these other programs that they have, that nobody will know about it and they won't think it's a good studio. And that's not the case, because you know, it's more of an ego thing, I think, at that point. So if you know what you can do with the kids, the minute that they come in the door and they're with you, you can have them forever. And then now you have trained them the way that you want them to take class, the way that you want them to be a customer, the way you want them to be a family at your studio with your policies, your procedures, all the way up. Because when you do get those kids, if you market to the competitive dancer that maybe has been at their studio for 4 or 5 years, and you're the new studio that opens up, there's a lot of people, well, not a lot, there's low-hanging fruit, basically, at the other places that are always going to be unhappy. And guess what's going to happen? You're going to attract those people. And those people are going to come to your studio your first year and ruin your life, in a sense. Because and as we're talking about this, yes, I marketed to those young students, but guess what? I still got those kids from the competitive places. I still got them anyway. And I will tell you that if I knew what I know now, because you don't ever want to turn a student away. You know, if someone says, I'm 11 years old and I want to come to your studio and I've been dancing at this other studio, but it's just not working out for us, it's hard to say no, thank you. Right? So especially when you just need students. But if I had to do over again, and I've told other people when they're opening their first studio, what I wouldn't have done is I wouldn't have let them do competitions that first year. I would have said, sure, I'll take you, but we don't do competitive events this year. We might do it next year or the year after, but we're just getting started. Because what ended up happening is I had all these kids, and it sounds so wonderful, and it was, but then I had 20 kids, just 20, like less than 1% of the whole population, that made that year, or those first few years, really, really difficult, because they were always going to be unhappy. And so I learned quickly that those 20 kids were taking 90% of my time. Does that make sense? So it was like, but there's not much you can do about it. I know we're getting a little off topic here, but I think it's important specifically for a new studio owner to know the pitfalls of that. And I think that's why, you know, but you don't know until you've learned it. But I didn't even market to them. But when there's anything new opens up, they want to kind of check that out. So
exactly.
Exactly. So
I love that point though, because you're right. When someone's opening up a studio, their main objective is to get those numbers, you know, get those students through the door. So they're saying yes to everything, you know, will you do a birthday party? Yes, we'll do a birthday party. Will you teach us, you know, will you teach this class? Do you do musical theater? Yes, we can. You know, like I always feel like studio owners don't learn how to say no until a couple of years into it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And then you find yourself in a place where you have to go back and change the rules. And that is the hardest thing to do, which is why, you know, I love talking with new studio owners, because I feel like now there's so many programs and systems out there for them that I didn't have in 2000 to manage their studio and curriculums and things like that, that would make their life like so much easier. And I wish I had those things. And if you do them from the very beginning, that's all the parent ever knows. You know, so, but definitely, you know, yes, you can have 9 solos, you know, and then all of a sudden you realize, no, I don't think that's a good idea to have that one child in 9 solos in the recital. So anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. Sure. Awesome advice. And, you know, you now own 7 locations. So I'd love to know how you initially planned for growth, or, you know, was there a plan, or was it really organic growth?
Yeah, and actually, I will have to tell you, exciting news. Probably the last time we talked, we had 7. We now have grown to 9 locations. So we just opened a location in San Jose and one in a club Sport Pleasanton. So, and with our 9 locations, basically this is how it started. You ask if it was organic, and the answer is yes. And the reason it is, you know, it all depends on your demographics and geography. But where we are in the Tri-Valley area, we're in this town of 80,000 people. And 7 miles away, there's another town with 80,000 people. And between those two towns, there's quite a bit of traffic. So it's, you know, it doesn't take you 3 hours to get there, but it takes you 25 minutes. So it's not commuter friendly. And so in the Livermore studio, we were doing the Twinkle Star. And I when I opened the first location on that first day, I named my baby classes Twinkle Stars and Twinkle Babies, Twinkle Babies, Twinkle Stars for the 2 through 6s. And, at the time, I think the program, and probably even till now, what we were doing with the babies was something nobody else was doing. And we would get students that were coming from those other towns in big numbers. And I had a parent ask me, a few of them, please, will you please come and do a facility in Pleasanton, this other town over? And, you know, I was very resistant to it at first because I didn't want to open a new studio and sign another lease. So instead I said, okay, I'll go ahead and try it because this would be great. This would expand my market into that town. And it would also allow for the teachers that I had at the time to have more hours. And if my teachers have more hours, they're going to teach full time for me, and I will have more quality and more control with my faculty and will grow even more. So I said, well, this is actually a good idea. So what I did instead of opening a facility right away is that I rented space at a health club that actually ended up having a dance studio. So, I mean, it was kind of lucky, but there are other facilities like this. And I went in and we did a percentage of the tuition revenue. So you could either, you know, pay an hourly or do that. And that grew in the first year to another 350 kids in Pleasanton. And then at that point, it was apparent that it was time to get our own, you know, facility because I was paying more to have that space and I needed more space. So at that point, then we ended up finding our own, you know, we leased a space there in a shopping center and moved it that way. But that was a much easier and less risky move because I already had the clientele. So I already had recurring revenue going into the lease. So you're not just going and opening this facility with this rent that you know
and
you have.
Yeah, no money coming in.
Right. And with the health club model, or let's say community center or rental model, you're only paying for space when you're using it. And typically you're using the space when there's income.
Yeah, so, that's right.
You know, it's actually a really good model. And in the summertime, maybe when things aren't as busy, then you are having to pay that because there aren't classes going on. So that was actually a really successful thing for us. And then from there, that grew to the next town over, which is San Ramon. And then it's kept growing. And now we have nine locations within the Bay Area. And we have, eight in the Bay Area and one down in Southern California.
Yeah, it's a great achievement. Congratulations. It's funny that we're talking about this. I've had multiple conversations this week with studio owners that are either thinking about setting up a second location or already have. And I see so many studio owners taking on a second location too soon. You know, their systems, their processes, their programs aren't in place at their foundation. You know, the first one that they've started, they're not at, you know, even 80%, 70%, 80% with their class capacities. And they think that it's going to be easier by jumping into a new location. I mean, what advice do you have for studio owners that are potentially looking at a second location?
Yeah, I think the first question I would ask would be why. I mean, I think that, you know, I know just in your, okay, if you look at it this way, the one thing I know now after having nine locations is I've learned a lot about what makes money. And I know that we do this business to make money. We all have to earn a living. And I know what grows dancers. And there's somewhere in between that is a nice match. But when you take on that second location, you're doubling your expenses and you're also you need to also have you have to have staff and teachers that are as great at that one location as the second. So now you've doubled your expenses and now you've also put your resources in kind of a, not a bind, I'm looking for the word, but you've limited your resources now that you know, and so I would look at, like you said, you know, you look at your first location, you go, okay, are we maxed out here? Are we maxed out? Is there a reason to go into this next town? Are the people in the next town not coming to us for what reason? You know, is there a reason that they don't come to us? Because if you are getting, and I will tell you this for sure, you know, we had 200 Pleasanton kids coming to Livermore. And when we opened Pleasanton, those 200 kids went to Pleasanton. Well, that's great, except for now I'm paying two rents on what I used to pay one rent on all those students. So my advice is, first of all, you've got to have whatever product you have to be able to duplicate it. So if your product is a studio owner and her teaching or his teaching style, and that's really the draw, or if it's this one teacher or that one teacher, that's what makes it very popular, then you have to make sure that you've got enough staff that can do the same thing in the next location. And because a lot of times you can be successful in one location, it's because of the teacher. But unless that teacher can be in both places, then that success is not going to carry over to the second location. So you have to have an abundance of really, really awesome teachers that you know need hours. And then that can work really nicely. And the other thing you need is a curriculum. You need to be able to control the quality. So like with me, with my baby program, it was on video and it had a syllabus and all that good stuff. So I could say, okay, I can plug this in over here and I know exactly the quality that those dancers are going to get. So I know that it will work. But a lot of times, if it's one teacher, a lot of what we do is in our own minds. It's in our minds and our body, and it's hard to get that out so that we can replicate it. Does that make sense?
100%.
Okay. And so I think that's something that needs to be really considered, because owning multiple locations has its benefits, but there are also a lot of drawbacks, and there's a lot of risk. And one of the risks and the drawbacks is that you're not going to know everybody. And the studio, you're going to feel torn between both places as a studio owner. And at that point, then you become the manager. And you have to be willing and able to step out of maybe your teaching role full-time or whatever it is that you were doing as the studio owner and be managing. And those teachers, you become a teacher of the teachers. And if you don't see yourself wanting to do that or finding the time to do that before you expand, then you need to set that first and, start hiring your teachers and getting them all trained before then you expand your expenses, increase your expenses to the next location. Because the one thing I do know is that the biggest moneymaker out of all the models is a one-room studio with 500 kids.
That's right.
Because it's happened, and I will tell you that it is, if you want to just talk money and profit, that is your most profitable thing. We had a studio that had actually about 550 kids in a one-room studio that came weekly. It got so big, it was making so much money, it was great, but the problem is that the parents keep saying, we need more space, we need more space. The teachers say, we need more space, we need more space, we need more space. So what we did, and I fought against it for a little while, is we took the space next to us. So now we have two spaces. Well, guess what we just did? We doubled our expenses. We would have to double our student base in order to stay at the same profit margin, the same profit each month. And guess what now? We make half of what we used to make. But the students are now able to take more classes. So there is your balance. A lot of times in this business, you're balancing training, education, training dancers, what's best for them, and what's best for the financial stability of your studio. And those are the two things I think we're always weighing, which one is more important, or are they both important, and what's important to us as a studio owner. So, there's a lot to consider with that second location, but I think you just, like you said, they've got to have all those systems in place, and there are plenty of ways to expand without leasing a space or buying something or really, really getting locked in, and that's that health club or the rental
Rec
situation.
Center.
And test the market. Go into a Pilates studio that maybe doesn't run, or a yoga studio that doesn't run all the time. They don't run mornings. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you can look at this. And just put on a Saturday morning for babies and see what happens.
Yeah.
But make sure you have the teacher first. And then test it, see how it goes, and then maybe see how that feels and how to communicate, with those parents. Because that's the other thing, and I hope I'm not going too long on this question. But
no, not at all.
Okay, that's the other thing that really is difficult and challenging is the communication between the two locations. You've got to make sure that now you have someone in that other location that's giving, like the front desk person or somebody that can communicate with those parents over there. So now you need another office person. And now that office person needs to be able to communicate back to the other location. So maybe you need a phone system. And what kind of studio management software are you using? Because if you're using one that's not web-based and it's not connected to anything else, you've got to upgrade that to something like Studio Director or JackRabbit that then is web-based and can have multiple portals being used at the same time so that you can talk to each other. So those are the things that I think that, you know, need to be researched first and then, you know, maybe just test the market. That would be my advice.
Excellent. Excellent advice. I love it, Tiffany. You talked a bit about the numbers and I want to ask you, how important is knowing the numbers as a studio owner? I mean, we deal with this daily. We do a lot of training with studio owners about, you know, knowing their numbers. How important has it been for you in growing your business?
In numbers, let me ask to clarify, like which kind of numbers?
Yeah, so like numbers in terms numbers? Of, you know, your financials, the amount of mm-hmm. students you've enrolled, you know, mm-hmm. fees that are owing, retention rates. So all of those crucial numbers in your business mm-hmm. That gives you a really great handle on what's going on and where you're headed.
Yeah, no, I think that's just, that's probably number one. I mean, every day, I would say 6 or 7 times a day, I check enrollment numbers at my desk at every location that we have. And I can do that in 3 minutes with the systems that we have. I can check numbers. I can also run a report. I run reports a lot on class lists. So I can see, and then I can sort it by enrollment. So I can see what's low. I can see classes that have 2 or 3 kids in them. And then I can look at those classes and think, okay, is that a level 2 class? Because that level 2 class, if it only has 3 kids in it right now, it's probably not going to get any more at this time of the year. And that class isn't making any money. And so one thing I think about numbers and what I can offer other studio owners that I've learned is that we think about student enrollment as if you're looking at student enrollment one-dimensionally. Okay, I have 300 kids. Okay, great. I have 300 kids. That's great, except for when you're looking at really the most important thing is how many classes are you running? If you are running 300 kids in 10 classes, that's awesome.
Yeah,
right?
We love that.
Right. If you are running 300 kids in 300 classes, that's not so good. Because, you know, okay, so I'm just being kind of like from one extreme to the next. A lot of times we look at a class, it's let's just say it's a teen tap class. All right, our favorite. Teen tap, and you know what time it's at? It's at 8:30 on a Monday.
It's the busiest class that you run.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're like, okay, it's got 2 kids, and there's a third one that might take it. I don't know, you know. And I have a teacher, and maybe she's making between $20 and $30 an hour. So you're kind of doing the math on that, but you've got these 2 kids in there, and then if I take those 2 kids away, I only have 298 kids, you know, total. So I had to keep that class running because I'll lose those 2 kids. But the problem with that is that those 2 kids cost you money. Those 2 kids are that class is actually you're paying to run that class. That class is costing you money. So I'm not trying to be offensive with these 2 teen tap dancers. We care about them. But if those two teen tap dancers went away and you told them this class is not running, you would end up with a higher bottom line. You will make more money because those 2 kids, let's just say they're paying $10 per class. Okay, so that's $20. If your teacher is $30, you're losing $10 per class. Now, that's saying, you know, I'm just throwing out those numbers. $10 per class times, you know, 4 classes in a month. Okay, so there you go, $40. But you're also not counting what it costs to keep the lights on, have a front desk person there while that class is running, you know, all of those things that go into running. There's a lot more than just payroll that goes into that class, but that's a really good way to look at it. So having said that, if you had 4 classes, right, that have 2 kids and those, say it's 4 hours. So now you've got 10 times 4. times four, right? So I'm not doing math in my head right now because that would be dangerous and I don't want to throw numbers. But if you did that and you said, okay, I'm going to take all 2, 4, 6, 8 of those kids, and let's just say magically I can move them to other classes that were running already. Okay, so I keep the kids, but I get rid of those 4 payroll hours. Then you're really ahead of the game because you're going $40 times 4. That's $160 a month. Well, am I right? So again, like I'm doing math online and I shouldn't be doing it in my head.
Yeah. But get the understand the formula though.
Okay. Okay. So I think a lot of times that's the problem. And in one of our locations, and this is where I know this is true. One of our locations, South San Francisco location, we actually ended up buying that location. It was in existence for 56 years. And it was a big location. So when we bought it, you know, it was like, you know, maybe 300 kids, but, you know, we're looking at 4 rooms running at the same time. And we tried for 2 or 3 years and we just kept losing money because it was the payroll. There wasn't enough. And when you looked at it, you're like, okay, there's 6 kids in one and 7 in the other, but it just wasn't cutting it. And I wasn't working there. So if the studio owner isn't working there at all, then none of those payroll hours is paying myself. Okay, so all of these facilities that I have to make money independently of me. And so I looked at it and I did one day we were deciding whether to close it or keep it open because we had, you know, we just keep losing money. And I said to my accountant, I said, okay, so tell me what my revenue is each month. And she said like $23,000. That was my tuition. And I said, okay, so instead of trying to get more students right now, because maybe we're in November, you know, or we're in February, something like that. Let me see if I can figure out how to just keep more of that money. How can I keep more of $23,000? Because I know that's what's coming in. And the way that I did that is I combined a bunch of classes that were 4 kids, 5 kids, even some that had 6. And I just had to consolidate. And even though we had 4 rooms, I didn't run 4 rooms every day. So just because you have the space doesn't mean you have to fill it. So I did 2 classes, 2 lineups, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and on Thursday I had 3. And that saved the business, and now we're in a positive cash flow, and it makes, actually, it's one of our best performers in our locations because I just kept that model. And then as you grow, right, as you grow, as your brand grows, you know, if it's something, if you bought a studio, that's a whole other podcast, honestly. but as you bought a studio, those parents are now learning, okay, this is the way you do things. But payroll was really where it was on that. So numbers are so, so important. And I think one of the best things is yes, it's that enrollment number, like your student base, but it's also your class enrollment number.
Yep.
So you have to know where your break-even point is with how many students in that class, according to the teacher, and what makes you money, you know? So having fewer classes is obviously better financially. The other thing I do is I do get monthly financials from our accountant, and I go through those financials, and a lot of times there's some things on there that you think, oh, well, it doesn't seem like a lot of money when you're doing it, like, oh, it's $20 per month, or it's this month, or you don't realize how much you're spending on this insurance policy or whatever those things are. So I recommend going through that every so often to make sure that those are still competitive rates for everything, you know, and kind of clean house a little bit. Okay, do we really need this part? Or is this the best rate we can get now? You know, or shopping for those percentage rates on your credit card fees. There's a lot of things that you can do on those ends as well with your finances. And that's a good way to see it at the end of the month to really kind of, you can see how much it really, how much your payroll adds up and how much your office admin really adds up and things like that. So I really do look at those.
I 100% agree with what you're saying. I love the point that you made really around the class numbers because this is a question we ask all the time is how many students do you have? And then we say, what capacity are your classes running at? Because I think that is the key. Like you said, if you've got, you know, 300 students and you're offering, you know, 100 classes a week, you know, not so great. But yeah, if you do have, you know, if you do have 300 and you're offering, you know, 20 or whatever, it's a lot more profitable because there are many studio owners out there now that are running classes with 2 and 3 students. and are really running themselves into the red.
Yes, yeah, no, for sure. And then the other thing is, I will say too, speaking to that, the only classes that we continue running, let's just say after October, that have less than three kids, or like three kids or less, are our Twinkle Baby and Twinkle Star classes. And the reason is because those kids, we know that anyone can join that class. And there are a plethora of those age groups. And we'll get another big enrollment time in here in California in January. But in a level two class or in a teen tap or an adult class, those classes, when you look at what that pool of kids could be, you know, there's less opportunity to build those classes over time than I think those baby classes. So we do keep those running a little bit longer.
Thanks for listening to the Studio Success Formula podcast. To take your studio to the next level and beyond, head to studiosuccessformula.com.